Here to dive into industry trends with leading ETF experts, this is ETF Spotlight with Nina Mishra.
Hello and welcome to ETF Spotlight. I'm your host, Nina Mishra. My guest today is Ryan McCormick, equity ETF strategist at Invesco. We are talking about the Invesco QQQ ETF and the new innovation suite. Ryan, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Okay, so let's start with QQQ. The ETF celebrated its 21st birthday this year, and it is one of the most popular ETFs in the world, and it now has almost $150 billion in assets. This is also one of the best performing ETFs of the past decade, up more than 500%, and it continues to lead the market this year as well. It is up about 40% this year, whereas the S&P 500 is up about 15%. So tell us why QQQ is doing so well this year. Is it mainly because of pandemic-driven digitization and the work-from-home trades that we have seen?
I think that's certainly part of it. It's been an interesting year to say the least. And I think in looking back at 2020 performance, we've seen a continuation of a number of themes within the market, particularly large cap over small cap, along with growth over value. So when we look back to the early part of the year, growth had been in QQQ by extension. Had built up a pretty sizable lead over other indices that are out there, let's say like the S&P 500. From peak to trough, the early peak to trough from February 18th to down to March 23rd, 24th, what we saw was QQQ held up a lot better than the S&P 500. Now, certainly the ETF was trading in negative territory along with most of the stocks within there, but it was down less than the S&P 500. So, I think with that, what we saw was investors were almost hiding out in large growth stocks as some measure of safety. I think part of that is the robust balance sheets that a lot of these stocks have. Beyond that, they're very well capitalized. But they experience less of the downside as it relates to other core indices, and certainly as you look at it relative to value indices. Now, I think there was sort of a change in investor psyche following March 24th, which was the announcement of the fiscal stimulus bill. I think after that, we saw investors recognize the very unique position that QQQ and its underlying holdings have in the marketplace, exactly as you had said, Nina, as it relates to the digitization of the economy, of the workplace, of the marketplace, et cetera. I think this, the thing that you hear about COVID, and I agree with, is it really was just a rapid acceleration of this digitization trend that's been building for the better part of the last decade. I think the companies within QQQ and the NASDAQ 100 index sort of had the foresight to make investments as it related to work from home type capabilities. Now, I don't necessarily mean that they saw a pandemic hitting, but they saw that the business was gravitating towards a more kind of flexible place, right? And the need for cloud-based services or big data analytics was becoming a more and more important part of business on the whole. So they made very significant investments within these sort of selected sub-themes. So they were very well positioned to take advantage of this increased demand that we saw brought on from COVID. And to use a cliche, in some of these scenarios, they not only survived, but thrived in this type of environment.
So yes, I agree with you. And investors love these mega cap tech companies. And particularly in a slow growth environment, they believe that these rapidly growing companies can continue to deliver faster sales and earnings growth than other companies. But do you think these trends can continue in 2021 as well? Because we will have widespread rollout of vaccines sometimes early to mid next year. And we have seen that all the vaccines that have been, that are being approved this year, they are very, very effective. So we'll have some sort of return to normalcy. And we'll also hopefully have a stimulus package soon, either this year or if not this year, then definitely next year. So that will benefit the economically sensitive sectors of the economy and the smaller capitalization company. So in that environment, do you think QQQ can continue to deliver the sort of performance it delivered in 2020?
Well, I think when you're looking at this on the whole, right, the hope is that you see this continued optimism and the development of these vaccines. And, you know, to your point, you look at efficacy rates that are approaching and exceeding, in some cases, 95%, right? That's certainly great for us to just return back towards normalcy. I think within that sort of framework, right, where we are in the economic cycle, probably within the recovery phase, which is why you've seen, you know, value stocks somewhat come to life here over the past month and even looking back to call it 3 months. Certainly a stimulus package would be additive in conjunction with economic growth and a return to normalcy for some of these unloved, more cyclical sectors and names. But, you know, I think when we take a step back and look at growth in general and innovation on the whole, right, we think that the trends and the runway that exist for some of these names are very long. We're probably entering a renewed, pretty long economic recovery cycle, with moderate to low growth. And, you know, I think that coupled with a fairly easy monetary policy and accommodative Fed, I think longer term tip the scales in the favor of a lot of these innovative type companies. You can further look back towards, you know, the sales and earnings growth that these companies have enjoyed over the past 10 years and the significant investment that they continue to make in research and development and across a number of disruptive technologies where, you know, they're really taking advantage of some of these transformative shifts that we're seeing in the marketplace. So, you know, we anticipate that the runway for a lot of these companies is very long.
So I'm looking at the top holdings in QQQ, Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Facebook, Google, and then Tesla is also one of the top holdings, and Tesla is up more than 600% this year, so that also probably contributed to the excellent performance. And there are many other companies, very innovative companies, that benefited from this work from home environment. Companies like DocuSign, Zoom Video, they have done very well this year. But I wanted you to talk about some of the companies which you think are very innovative and you like a lot.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you certainly alluded to DocuSign, right? Sort of a new addition to the NASDAQ 100, and certainly Zoom, right? It's a perfect example of the type of company that has really benefited from this post-COVID world. Another one I would point to would be Moderna. Of course, one of the early companies that were invested in the COVID-19 vaccine. Another example of a name that has significant performance for the year. I think there are a lot of these differentiated holdings that exist within QQQ and the NASDAQ 100. And you look at some of the names like this outside of the Apples and the Amazons of the world, you know, they've contributed pretty meaningfully to performance. And you know, a lot of it has been driven by this kind of post-COVID environment that we found ourselves in.
So let's talk about the innovation suite now. So in October, Invesco announced the launch of the Invesco QQQ Innovation Suite. So tell us why Invesco decided to launch this innovation suite and What does it hold?
Sure. So, you know, I think when we look at the market in general, Invesco is always trying to provide, you know, the best experience for our clients as possible, the end investor. You know, I think as it came to looking at the NASDAQ 100 and additional access into the NASDAQ 100, you know, we wanted to provide other options for investors. And you know, I think that a lot of that was the impetus behind our launching of QQQM, which is the NASDAQ 100 ETF, along with our R6 retirement mutual fund, tracking the NASDAQ 100 to be used in retirement accounts, along with our unit investment trust that looks at sort of the growth leaders within the NASDAQ 100. The more differentiated strategy would be that of QQQJ, which tracks the NASDAQ Next Generation Index. And, you know, we've heard a lot of demand from our a lot of our clients and across the street over the past few years of looking for additional ways to access innovation. And we work very closely, of course, with our partners in NASDAQ and looked at the Next Generation Index. So essentially looking down in market cap for some of those up-and-comers or next contributors to the NASDAQ 100 before they get included in the index. So, you know, essentially just looking to provide more options for investors to access innovation in the market.
So QQQM is basically just like QQQ. It's just like a clone, but cheaper version of QQQ. So it charges 15 basis points versus QQQ's 20 basis points expense ratio. So QQQM would be more suitable for buy and hold investors in longer term focused portfolios, whereas QQQ, which is like one of the most actively traded ETFs, that is more suitable for traders because of its liquidity. Is that correct?
Yeah, Nina, that's a great way to think of it, and certainly kind of the lens that we look at it. You know, QQQM is structured as a traditional 40 Act ETF, and you know, as you said, it's offered 5 basis points of expense ratio cheaper, so 15 basis points versus 20 basis points. QQQ is structured as a unit trust. And there are some small nuanced differences between, you know, additional kind of levers of flexibility that an ETF can offer, one of which would be the ability of the ETF to reinvest dividends, whereas a unit trust needs to hold dividends in cash as they come in. The ETF's ability to reinvest those dividends eliminates some of the cash drag that exists on the portfolio, say, for a UIT. The second difference would be the ability of an ETF to engage in securities lending. So lending out shares of securities for additional revenue for the fund, which would, you know, eventually be passed down in terms of cost savings. And then another important difference between QQQ and QQQM is that QQQM is offered at a lower NAV. So trading roughly around $125 a share versus QQQ, which is up in the realm of 300. We look at that as sort of following in the footsteps of a number of companies that have either issued new share classes or split their stock and, you know, have kind of followed that up by talking about accessibility to the retail investor. And we believe that offering QQQM at a lower NAV in the same vein, you know, gives broader accessibility to the retail investor and ultimately makes it a little easier to implement across client portfolios. As you had mentioned, you know, it's important to note that QQQ is not going anywhere. It's the fifth largest exchange traded fund in the U.S., and it will continue to be a very important vehicle for institutional block trading type transactions. But as you said, you know, for buy and holders with potentially multiple year time horizons or holding periods, we believe that the lower NAV coupled with the reduction in expense ratio would be more meaningful to those buyers over time.
That's helpful. So let's talk about QQQJ now. So this is quite different from QQQ. It is like, you know, a younger sibling of QQQ. It also holds growthy companies, but companies that are not as well known and widely owned as the QQQ constituents. Tell us more about QQQJ.
So QQQJ, it tracks the NASDAQ Next Generation Index. So as QQQ tracks the NASDAQ 100, which is the 100 largest companies on the NASDAQ exchange, X Financials, the NASDAQ Next Generation is the 100 largest companies just below that, also X Financials. So we kind of look at it as a larger mid-cap portfolio. And you know, when you look at the listings of a lot of the companies and the underlying holdings within the index and by extension QQQJ, it does lean much more growth. So you're going to have significant exposure to technology, to communication services, to consumer discretionary, and a very large allocation to healthcare at nearly 20% of the portfolio. Much more leaning towards, you know, more innovative biotech or biopharma medical device type companies. But, you know, definitely leaning more on the growth side of the spectrum. And, you know, as you said, it is a little bit of a younger sibling type relationship. We believe that the two strategies are very complementary to one another. And with that, what we found is a number of companies in any given year will graduate, so to speak, from the NASDAQ Next Generation Index into the NASDAQ 100. So essentially what we're trying to do in broadening this innovation suite is get exposure to a longer portion of these companies' growth cycle. So getting exposure to them as they rise the ranks of small to mid-cap before they get called up into the so-called big leagues or the NASDAQ 100. And in looking at the previous 10 calendar years, we've seen a high of 9 companies make the leap in a given year, a low of 2 companies, but there is a precedent of companies kind of making that leap every year. You know, on average, it's roughly 6 companies per year that graduate. But very notable names, very household names, including Tesla in 2013 or Netflix in 2010, companies like Regeneron, like Mercado Libre, more recently like Splunk or VeriSign or DocuSign earlier this year. So, you know, I think it's watching these companies again rise the ranks of the mid cap and jumping up into large cap, but using them concurrently as a suite, we think broadens investors' exposure to innovation on the whole.
So I'm looking at the top holdings in this ETF, and I see some familiar companies: Okta, Trade Desk, Roku, and Zscaler, Coupa Software, Garmin. These are some of the companies which have done very well this year, and that is why investors are familiar with them. Could you talk about some of the top holdings in this ETF that, in your view, are very innovative or have a lot of potential?
Sure. You know, I think you mentioned quite a few of them. You know, I think when you look at Roku, right, has certainly become a household name, and another company that is very well suited for a post-COVID environment, as you know, we've needed to find ways to bring entertainment into the home, and you know, streaming services have all experienced significant growth in terms of demand. You know, I think when you look at companies across the portfolio, a number of pretty innovative technology companies. I would point to a company like Zebra Software. You know, what we found is, much like the counterparts in the NASDAQ 100, the constituents of the NASDAQ Next Generation Index also have a firm commitment to research and development. Right. They spend higher than their counterparts in other indices as it comes to research and development. And what we found with that is, you know, that leads generally to a pretty significant portion of patent filings as it relates to a lot of these disruptive technologies. Zebra Software, for instance, has filed patents across 11 sort of sub-themes of disruptive technology in the 12 months ending May 31st of this year, which is sort of just the observation period of this patent study that was conducted by NASDAQ and a company called UNO. But they do a lot with RFID technologies, data capture. They also have a line of business for barcode printers, location systems. So you know they're very involved in a number of different business lines, and certainly very in tune with a lot of the movement of these so-called disruptive technologies. I think I would also point to healthcare. I think as you look at the innovation that's taking place within healthcare, it's staggering. And I think it's a perfect example where you kind of look at innovation does not just come from quote unquote technology. There's a lot of different sectors and companies that aren't necessarily considered technology companies that are among the most innovative in the world. One company I might highlight would be a company called Anilum, where they look at what's called RNAi or RNA interference. So essentially, it's the ability to selectively shut off certain genes in an effort to avoid harmful outcomes and specifically try to target and reverse the effects of a number of different diseases and the like. They've got a number of agreements, including ones with Novartis and Roche and Takeda Pharmaceuticals. But the discovery of this RNAi led to a Nobel Prize, and they are at the forefront of changing the way that we look at healthcare.
Very interesting. So these are all very innovative companies with a lot of growth potential. The valuations do look stretched in some cases. And you mentioned that QQQJ is complementary to QQQ or QQQM. So tell us a little bit more about how these products fit into an investor's portfolio.
So, we look at it sort of ways to get different growth exposure. And given that within each of these portfolios and the underlying indices, there are 100 holdings, you are getting a concentrated basket of these growth type companies. Within a portfolio, your traditional sort of size and style boxes, I would look at it as the large and mid-cap growth arena. QQQJ, at the moment skews a little bit larger cap than, say, the S&P 400, but skews a little bit smaller cap than, say, the Russell mid-cap growth. So, as I said earlier, kind of a larger mid-cap type strategy. But again, at the end of the day, what you're getting here is some of the more innovative companies that are out there with this preference and commitment to R&D, which has led to substantial fundamental growth as you look over the past number of years. So it's kind of a differentiated way to look at your growth exposure by investing in these baskets of companies that have exposure to a number of growing and innovative and disruptive themes within the marketplace.
Very interesting. That's all we have time for today. Ryan, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. If you want to learn more about these ETFs, please visit the ETF section of Zacks.com. And also make sure to subscribe to our podcast so that you do not miss any episode. If you have any comments or questions, please email podcast@Zacks.com.
This material is being provided for informational purposes only, and nothing herein constitutes investment, legal, accounting, or tax advice, or a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold a security. Do not act or rely upon the information and advice given in this podcast without seeking the services of competent and professional legal, tax, or accounting counsel. Publication and distribution of this podcast is not intended to create, and the information contained herein does not constitute, an attorney-client relationship. No recommendation or advice is being given as to whether any investment or strategy is suitable for a particular investor. It should not be assumed that any investments in securities, companies, sectors, or markets identified and described were or will be profitable. All information is current as of the date herein and is subject to change without notice. Any views or opinions expressed may not reflect those of Zacks Investment Research as a whole.